2-2 pitch. A swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
All right. Welcome back to another Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me is Ian Kundle. We're both on our way. We're both returned from Florida. Mm-hmm. We've been down there for a couple weeks just about. I was, 12 days, 13 days? How long were you there?
Nine, 11 days.
There you go. A lot of backfield looks, a lot of spring breakout looks, a lot of baseball. But we are not going to talk about that this week. We're going to dive into this NL West prospect preview. Technically, opening days have happened. There's still a couple of teams that are opening up on Friday. I know the Blue Jays and a few others. But that said, the minor leagues don't officially fully open until later next week. We do have AAA opening day today. But we're going to bang out our last prospect preview going through the NL West and the five teams that are out there. Some exciting names that we're going to talk throughout this one. Some down systems as well between the Padres and the Rockies, but some good ones. And we're going to start with arguably the best one at the top. That is the Los Angeles Dodgers, the defending two-time reigning World Series champions. As you might recall on these podcasts, we go 2026 contributor, then we go highest upside, underrated player. 2026 contributor, I'm going to kick this off, Ian. It's tough. This is probably one of the toughest 2026 contributor questions because it's the Dodgers, and breaking in with a valuable fantasy role with the Dodgers isn't easy. Guys can be part-time players and fill-ins and somebody that you maybe stream in a shallower league. Guys that come in and maybe make some spot starts and primarily work in relief. And I think that's kind of where we're working here. I'm going to take my guy, River Ryan. Wrote an article about it a couple weeks ago. I think we saw how Emmett Sheehan kind of played out last year as a guy coming off of an injury, started off in the bullpen, got some more starts as the arrested guys are dealt with injuries. I think that's always something you're going to see with this Dodgers rotation, just in terms of how they manage the innings, how they manage injuries, nicks and bruises, and they have a ton of depth. Ryan was really good during spring training, and the stuff is back, maybe even improved in some regards. He's super athletic and somebody that was trending upward and potentially pushing his way into the rotation prior to the injury. So I do feel that some point in this season, it may not be over the first 2 months, but at some point in this year, River Ryan is going to be a valuable piece for the Dodgers, and valuable in fantasy because of that. Just the opportunities for wins and strikeouts and, you know, whatever that typically comes along with Dodgers pitching prospects. Is there another name that you wanted to throw out here, Ian?
Yeah, as you said, it's a little tricky because the Dodgers, just they have a lot of good players, so it's hard for anyone to break in. But Alex Freeland, actually, he's on their opening day roster, and it looks like he's going to be in a platoon at second base to start the year. So he's going to get some playing time. He's going to be splitting it with probably Miguel Rojas and maybe Santiago Espinal also. But if he can go out there and hit, I think there's a chance for him to gain more playing time, because he's someone, obviously, that has had success in the past. He has been a high-ranked prospect. I think some of the shine a little bit wore off last year. But he had a good camp, and he's now, obviously, he's on the major league roster. And there's a chance that, hey, if he could easily just go out there and grab the job, because you look at his underlying data from last year, and it's good. You know, 90th percentile exit velocity of 104.6 miles an hour. His max EV is close to 110. Decent contact rates. Angles are okay. Maybe there's some good, some more average. But overall, I think I don't think it's the highest upside skill set, but I think he's a guy that, I mean, playing time is what matters with the Dodgers. Yeah. And the fact that they're giving him playing time shows they have confidence in him. And how he performs while Tommy Edman is out is probably going to determine how much runway he gets. But I think there's a chance that he could grab, you know, at least probably not a full-time job, but maybe, you know, chance to play 60, 70% of the games.
Yeah. And even, you know, he's a switch hitter too. So some of those angles, depending on like the side of the plate that you're looking at, can vary. But I think it also makes him a valuable piece on that bench.
Yeah,
that they can put him in sort of either style of lineup, whether they're facing a righty or they're facing a lefty. And overall, despite, you know, sort of underperforming some of his underlying metrics, those underlying metrics are pretty good. Like, you know, his swinging strike rate wasn't absurd. Yeah. His swing decisions were really good last year in that small sample size. There's enough power there. He can play value multiple positions throughout the infield, could probably even, you know, handle shortstop in a pinch, and the glove is pretty good. So, yeah, maybe he sneaks himself into like a valuable season. It's just, it's always a little tough. All right, let's move on to the highest upside guys. There's probably four outfielders that we can name here in the Quintaro, DePaula, Hope, Sirota group. To me, I think those are the guys in the system that kind of lead it. They're universally owned in every kind of dynasty league at this point. They all have sort of different upside. Like, I think Quintero kind of brings that speed power thing with some hitting ability, but also like the defensive floor. DePaula's pure bat that when we talk about, you know, the combination of plate skills and then power, if that power ceiling, those angles get to a point, and they have steadily improved over the years, if they get to a point where they're optimized, fully optimized, I mean, his upside is like a top 30 hitter, like in fantasy. I really think that. It's just he doesn't have the defensive upside. He's not going to run as much, really. It, like, long-term, I don't care about minor league stolen base numbers. Hope, it's power.
Yeah.
And on-base ability, I think maybe the upside's a little lower just because the hit tool isn't on par with DePaula or Sirota, who we're going to talk about, or Quintero. Sirota's the oldest of the group, certainly has the murkiest injury history, but we're kind of seeing what a Sirota type of player can be on opening day with Chase DeLauder. Like, that to me is a very comparable player of a good athlete, good plate skills. Some things are unusual, but there's power there, and it's just a matter of him staying on the field, and he hasn't done that consistently over the last few years. So it's a really talented group. I don't know if you have anything to add on those guys. I figure this is almost like a free space in this podcast because there's so many high upside guys at the top of that system that we could talk about, and they all play the same position, and they're all in the same field at one point last year too. Well, I guess one of them is DHing every day, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a build your own adventure here. It's what profile do you like? Are you someone who's risk averse? Okay, maybe you want to go for Sirota, or are you willing to take more of a chance? Maybe Zaire Hope is kind of your player. So I think it provides opportunity that you can kind of target the type of player that you're most interested in, because there's all considerable upside with each. I just think it's funny that the Dodgers, you know, it's four outfielders right there, and then you look at their major league outfield, and there's just no room for another guy there either. So it's going to be interesting to see what they kind of do with these guys going forward. But yeah, I think that all of them have, you know, you can make a case for any of them. It's just a kind of a, like, what kind of profile of player do you like to target?
Yeah, I think ultimately that's what the question is. Yeah. And they're all interesting and, you know, valuable fantasy type guys. All right. I'm going to throw it over to you on underrated player. Who do you got in this system for the underrated player?
So I think I'm pulling a switcheroo on you, and I'm going to go with Zach Root, who was their first round pick last year. Out of Arkansas. And he's someone who I believe Josh saw recently in their spring breakout game. And his stuff just looks to have ticked up considerably from where it was in college. In college last year, he was sitting like 92 to 95, get up to 97. Now in the spring breakout game, he was 96 to 99. So pretty big velo increase here. Got a curveball, changeup, slider. And he's someone who, if the stuff, you know, it, and this is the major question and something we were talking about before the show, that, you know, with these spring breakout game looks, how are players going to hold the stuff they show in this shorter stint in a showcase environment when you're really amped up over the course of, you know, into the first month of the season and then over the course of the full season? We don't know. And that's a big question with Root. If he holds stuff like this, he's going to fly up prospect list and dynasty list. But that remains to be seen if he can do that. So I think there's actually probably a decent buying opportunity here if you can get in early. Obviously, there's always risk with Dodgers pitchers that, you know, the injury track record is not great with a lot of their guys. But the raw stuff that he showed in that game is really, really intriguing. And if he can carry that over to the season, there could be a lot of value here, especially if you haven't done an FYPD yet.
Yeah, I think he is an interesting one. And it's, you know, I wasn't super into it in college. But, you know, if it's one of those things where, like, the stuff is really ticked up, it's hard not to, like, at least, you know, consider it a little bit, right? Like, yeah. In terms of this being, like, a true, you know, sort of breakout. The guy that I want to throw out there as sort of my underrated player in this Dodgers system is Adam Serwinowski, 6'5" lefty. you know, I think the angles are really good too. It's just like a weird higher slot that somehow, like, because he creates nearly 7 feet of extension, gets down the mound a little bit more. So it's only like a 5'8" release height. So it's a weird combination of traits. I know it's kind of in that like middle zone in terms of release heights that you'd like it to be maybe a little lower or a little over 6 feet. But I think that he's just creating weird angles for a lefty. There's enough power here. There's enough cut ride on the fastball. It's an interesting curveball that he throws fairly hard. He's got feel for the changeup as well, which is obviously valuable from a lefty. And yeah, I mean, it's underrated player in the Dodgers system. So you can take that with a grain of salt, but anytime the Dodgers go out and acquire a prospect, I tend to sort of pay attention because they've had pretty good success in terms of hitting on those guys overall. So Sermonowski is the other name that I would call out there. Let's move on to the Arizona Diamondbacks here. Ian, who's your 2026 contributor for the D-backs? You're muted. Ian, you're muted.
Oops. Be a pro one time, Ian. Let's try this again. Arizona is in an interesting spot because I feel like I want to pick Jordan Lawler for this, but I guess he finally has graduated from prospect status, so I guess we can't pick him for this. So I'm going to go with Ryan Waldschmidt, who is also the top prospect in that system. I look at their outfield, and there's just a spot that's just waiting for him. I just think it's only a matter of time. He is an outfielder, really good upside at the plate. Really good swing decisions, like 15-16% chase rate last year. Hits the ball hard. Angles are pretty good. He's got a track record of performance. He was got in the upper minors last year and performed well there. I think it's only a matter of time before they look at the guys they're throwing out there and decide that Waldschmidt is the best option. And he makes the jump. And I think once he does, he has the upside and the ability to just, you know, grab that job and just keep it for, you know, the next however long he's in the system. The guy last year at 289, 419, 473 in high A and double A. I expect his numbers are going to be pretty good when he heads out to their triple A affiliate this year. I'm assuming he goes there because that is quite the hitter's paradise. So I think that Waldschmidt's someone that he's probably owned in everything. But if not, I think there's just a really nice combination of on-base ability. Last year, he almost had as many walks as strikeouts, and then there's also some power upside too. I don't know if it's, you know, 20, it might be only 20 home runs or so, but I think the batting average on base will be high that he'll be able to contribute in enough categories that you'll be able to overlook more like average-ish power.
Yeah, and he's probably the highest upside prospect in the system too. Like, we won't list him there for this podcast, but I think if we're being totally honest, it's one of those situations where he kind of fits. Yeah. Both the best 2026 contributor and probably the highest upside fantasy guy as well. I'm going to pull a little switcheroo on you myself, and I'm going to actually switch my pick here in terms of a 2026 contributor to Jose Fernandez. He's on the 40-man roster, had a breakout year last year with double-A, kind of a little under the radar. Hit 272, 321, 454 with 17 home runs, which is actually only a 98 WRC plus in the Texas League because it's such a good
season. Gotta love park factors.
Yeah, but I mean, he can pick it a little bit. He's still really young at 22 years old. They added him to the 40-man roster for a reason. He was pretty good this spring, 280, 308, 840, three home runs. You know, I think the approach is probably a little bit concerning just in terms of like what the O swing is going to be like. It's a higher swing and strike rate. So he is a guy that kind of hunts for barrels. But in a 5x5 roto league that's deeper, you're a 30-team league and there's 400 prospects rostered, like Jose Fernandez should definitely be rostered and I think could have a little value. And when you're looking at who could potentially contribute to this team, you know, you got to look at guys that are on the 40-man roster and could, you know, potentially replace an injury. Like that's kind of otherwise, like they're kind of, their core is a little too young at this point to see anybody just being replaced straight up. And there aren't that many underperforming type players. So Jose Fernandez is the one that I'll throw out there. Talking highest upside here, we kind of already said that it's probably Ryan Waldschmidt. Who would you pick in the system for highest upside?
Yeah, I'd probably go with Waldschmidt, but if we're gonna remove him from the equation, I think there's a couple options. I'm gonna throw out there David Hageman. He's a right-handed pitcher they got from the Rangers as part of the Merrill Kelly trade. Seemed like he was kind of underrated at the time. I think he was not really seen as, you know, the biggest piece in the deal, but he's really taken a step forward. It looks like he might be a steal in that trade. He's got good size, 6'4", 215 pounds. He's got four pitches. He's got a track record of throwing strikes. I think there's just a lot to like here that, you know, maybe eventually he can get to being like a, you know, mid-rotation starter upside-wise. And, I think there's a lot for Arizona to build on based on what he showed last year getting up to high A, especially after they acquired him.
100%, I agree. And this guy was someone you talked about off air as maybe being one of the highest upside guys. So I'm going to kind of blend this in the underrated, because I don't think there's a ton of underrated guys in this system. We already talked about Fernandez. Talk to me a little about JD Dix, because I liked the athlete based on the athletic testing coming out of the draft last year. Ended up grabbing him in a lot of places in FYPD, drafts. And kind of held steadfast. I think the underlying stuff is there. I think the upside is there. Talk to me a little bit of what you've heard regarding Dix and, you know, how he might be a breakout this year even.
Yeah, actually. So I, funnily enough, had him in my my breakout column this year, the teams that you and I did, and Matt did one also. And I think with Dix, it's, you know, projectable frame. He's listed at 6'2", 180, but there's room to fill out and he gets stronger and he's got strong contact skills already. 77% contact rate, rarely whiffs in the zone, good chase rate. And the big thing is the EVs don't jump off the page right now, but if he can continue to progress physically, I think there's some power in there. And if he can, you know, has the chance to develop into a guy who's going to hit for contact and get to average power, and he'll add above average to plus speed, like that's a really interesting fantasy player. And I think part of what kind of keeps him down right now is the defensive profile. His arm last year was not great, looked more like a second base profile, but I guess I've heard this spring it looked a little better. So we'll see. I mean, long term, he probably still is a second baseman, but if he can at least, you know, fake it at shortstop for now, that could even raise the stock further. And I just think the offensive upside is really interesting here. Like, this is a guy who I think has the potential for above average hit, average ish power, and plus speed. In fantasy format, you know, that's a really valuable player. And I think that the price right now is really low because, you know, this is a guy last year, if you look at his numbers, they don't really jump off the page. He had two home runs last year. Spent the split time between rookie level and low A. Only he did hit 297, but yeah, I think that there's considerable upside here, and I think he's someone that internally Arizona really likes as well.
It's good stuff. All right, couple teams down. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the exciting San Diego Padres system. All right, and we are back. We are talking AL West prospects. And the prospect preview is the final of six. You can go back and check out the rest of those. Jeff Ponce, Ian Kundle. We're talking San Diego Padres now. As far as 2026 contributors, man, there's not a lot of options. We're talking a couple of relievers. I have Miguel Mendez, who's not on the active roster, and Bragley Rodriguez, who is kind of like a cleanup guy for them, like a, you know, middle reliever, not
look,
in their
look good on opening day.
Yeah, I mean, so there you go. That a couple of guys, I guess, that contribute if you're in like a deeper league that has holds.
Yep.
But there's not like a starter. There's not a position player where I'm like, I'm putting my bets on that guy contributing this year. It's just, this is about as bad of a system as we have. I just have a little more faith in them than maybe the Rockies, because it's AJ Preller and he usually has a couple of gems that he pulls from the high school ranks or the international market or something. So, but there's not a whole lot to hang your hat on here. I don't know if you have any thoughts on these Padres 2026 contributors.
No, I mean, I agree with you. I think when you look at their system, it's a lot of their, if talent in parentheses is in the low minors right now. And there's just not a lot of major league ready contributors. And I mean, that's what happens when you trade away. You know, you look at the Mason Miller trade last year, mm-hmm. Look at the trade with the Orioles, like they sent out, I think like eight or nine prospects combined in those two trades. And when you do stuff like that, you know, that the result is going to be where the system is at right now, where we're talking about middle relievers as potential contributors.
And they do it like every year.
Yeah.
You know, good on them for refilling the cupboard and then just emptying it out immediately to get.
Yeah.
But hey, you know, like they're staying in contention in a very small market, and they're
very good division
records in terms of sellouts and everything else. So, you know, hat tip to the Padres, but mm-hmm. let's move on to their high upside guys. I do think there's a couple of pitchers here that you can, you know, potentially go after. I'm going to steal a thunder here and take the really easy one in Cruz Schoolcraft, their first rounder last year. Left-hander, weird angles. There's some projection. Biggest question with him is if he actually can spin a good breaking ball, right? So it's a good fastball. It's a good changeup. He's got pitchability. There's some power there. You know, the reports have always been pretty good, kind of dating back to last fall. But, you know, like with any pitcher, there's some things that need to be improved. And, you know, you need the ability to throw a good breaking ball at this point, or you need like an outlier changeup. Like you need a changeup that is, you know, a breaking ball style pitch that almost doesn't have split issues, right? Like you can throw it right on right or whatever. Like that's the only, you have to have one of those special splitters or changeups. And there's just not a lot of guys that can do that. So I think that's my question with Schoolcraft, but I do think like you look at the size, the physical projection, the ability that's already there, and it's at least like a legitimate top 100-ish caliber type of prospect, even if he's not on a list, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's outlier size too. I'm sure the extension, I'm interested to see what his extension ends up being once we get some pro ball data. But yeah, no, I think that's a good choice. And for mine, it's another left-handed pitcher, Cash Mayfield. He's a little more advanced than Schoolcraft. He's obviously a year ahead. And he had a very good pro debut, went out into Lake Elsinore, 61 innings, 88 strikeouts, 2.97 ERA. Not that that really means much, but he's pretty good in the Cal League. You know, when you value in how hard those are for pitchers, it's a really good debut. And speaking of outlier changeups, I would say Mayfield, it's not, you know, it's not a 70 changeup, but it's a plus changeup. Had a 55% whiff rate last year, really good separation from his fastball. I think the thing with Mayfield and what is limiting him right now is just where's the fastball going to go? You know, he's got good size, but it's more like an average-ish fastball right now. If that can take a step forward, kind of like what we talked about with Zach Root or what we've seen from some other pitchers velocity-wise, then I think he becomes a lot more interesting because it's just hard to get to better than like a mid-rotation starter if you're pitching with an average fastball, even if you have a plus changeup and like an above-average breaking ball. And so I think that the fastball quality is going to be the limiting factor here. But if that takes a step forward, I think, you know, Mayfield's someone who becomes a lot more interesting.
Yeah, I think so too, especially if he can add some power. Because like all the traits pitchability wise are there in spades. Like you watch him pitch and think, all right, if this wasn't 90 to 92, I'd be way more excited. This was like 2-4.
Yeah.
And there was
especially
another
the left side. The bar's not as high from the left side. Like, you know,
exactly. He doesn't have
gets to 92 to 90.
94 to 96. Exactly. Right.
Do you know what reminds me of kind of like is like the Connolly early starter kit, which is what when he entered the Red Sox, this is a lot of what his profile was. It was a plus changeup. Okay, like average to maybe a tick above breaking ball, but the fastball was light. Like he came in, he was pitching, you know, 90 to 92, as you said. And year after year, he slowly ticked up. And so I think with Mayfield, that's going to be what I'm watching this year is can he just jump? Even an incremental gain for a lefty is much bigger than it is for a righty, for a comparable gain for a right-handed pitcher.
A mile per hour almost might be like 1.5 to 2,
you know,
in terms of the conversion. So
that's
a really astute point. I like that. Let's move on to some underrated names. I'm going to go with somebody that was on my breakout team. I've already mentioned a couple of those, but first base is a tough position to fill in these breakout teams, right?
Like yes, it is.
Outfielders, even a catcher, like you have options. First base, it's tricky. I actually do like this player and would have considered him even maybe at a different position. And that's Cale Fountain, was a draft pick for them back in 2024. He had Tommy John surgery coming out of high school, was a historic player in the state of Nebraska. Not exactly a baseball hotbed, but I believe he set the state record for home runs, RBIs, stolen bases, and maybe like career OPS. Like, he's legitimately their best high school player in history. There's power here. There's upside. Under the hood data, like, the bat to ball skills were good. The approach was pretty good. The power, like a 111 max EV from a teenager, is good. The launch angles are pretty bad. I wonder if that time away from baseball and just like rehab and some of the stuff he had to work on there, you know, maybe there's just some low hanging fruit in terms of getting that stuff fixed this offseason. It'll be interesting to see what he does this year, you know, at a full season level, all that sort of thing. So, you know, I mean, take it with a grain of salt. This could all totally fall flat in its face as well. But I do think that he's a little underrated right now, just kind of based on his timeline of, you know, he had Tommy John surgery, had to recover from that, then goes into pro ball for the first time, doesn't have a normal off season. And, you know, it's there. The ability to hit is there. Just a matter of adjusting angles, which sometimes come with, added whiffs. Maybe that happens and that might sink the profile, but maybe it doesn't. Maybe it's at a balanced level that with those angles, all of a sudden he starts to get to more of that outlier power that, you know, he showed as an amateur. So Cale Fountain is the name that I'll throw out there. I don't know if you have one as well.
I do. Yeah. And I like that pick in a system devoid of bats. You know, someone like him, if he can take a step forward, probably establish himself as one of the top bats in the system very quickly. My pick is Tucker Musgrove, who was the Padres 2023, who was selected by the Padres, excuse me, in 2023. Sorry about that. Forgot to silence my phone. And he did not pitch until April of last year. He only threw 20 innings last year, 14 appearances, but his stuff is nasty. Like, if you look at, you know, models, his stuff is near the top of the system. His fastball sits in the mid 90s with over 17 inches of IVB. Plays up due to his extension, really flat approach angle. Like, there's really good traits on the fastball. And as I said, big time extension, really good athlete, you know, just there's a lot to like here with the fastball. Then you go to the breaking ball and it's a super high spin breaker, had a 41% whiff rate last year. He throws a pair of them. He's got a sweeper and a curveball. Like, this is the kind of guy when you're looking at a spreadsheet, he's going to pop. And then you look at the on-field results, and you're like, oh, okay, that's not great. But, you know, if he can put it together, I think there's considerable upside here. It's just, you know, it's a wait and see because he's just barely pitched since he was drafted.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I actually think that I kind of left you him. I think he is the most underrated player in the system. And
I would agree.
If he gets a chance to start and the refinement comes now that he's had more pro experience, there's like, he's one of those guys that could blow up. And then all of a sudden we're talking about him in July as like, this is a potential top 100 prospect. It will take some work to get there, but there's humongous upside
here. That's what I was about to say, is he definitely could have been picked for the highest upside too. I just think that there's so much. This is a guy, when we talk about the error bars or the variance in the profile, this is a great example of someone who, you know, the error bars here are massive, but the top error bar is high, which is what you're, I mean, in fantasy, especially when you're looking in deeper leagues, that's what you're looking for, is a guy who's undervalued and has high upside. And I think Musgrove fits that perfectly.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the San Francisco Giants. Now, this is arguably the best system in this division. I believe that the highest rated system in this division. They have a couple of interesting 2026 contributors, even if it may not necessarily be in an immediate sense. You know, I do think that Bryce Eldridge, because of his place on the 40-man roster now, the Raffy Devers trade kind of changed his short-term perspective a little bit, especially after Devers agreed to play some first base, though he's not there every day. It's been Casey Schmidt. He's been DHing more. So maybe the opportunity is still there. They did carry Gerard Encarnacion, who had a really, really good – he's back from Indie Ball. a couple of years back from Indie Ball, actually, and had a really good spring. So I understand why they carried him. I think you look at this bench of Susak, who they might carry because he's a Rule 5 guy that can catch a little bit and kind of offsets, you know, all-world defensive catcher Patrick Bailey with being more of like a bat-first player. Old friend Christian Koss is on this bench. Jared Oliva is on this bench. I still kind of buy into Bryce Eldridge has a good month or two in AAA, and he forces his way back up to the big leagues and maybe finds himself in the everyday roster, especially considering Casey Schmidt is now their their everyday first baseman. So I understand there's still some risk that maybe it's still a year away. I don't know. I could see him going on a run and getting up to the big leagues and just providing more than what they're getting out of Casey Schmidt at the plate. So,
yeah.
Though there's some risk that maybe it doesn't fully come to fruition, it's still Bryce Eldridge. He's still probably he's still probably the highest upside close proximity bat. I'll put it that way, because there are maybe higher upside players in the system, but as far as guys that are going to be in here in the next year or two, it's Eldridge. So yeah. That's my pick. I don't know if you have another name you want to throw out there.
I'll go to the pitching side and throw Carson Wisenhunt out there. He's someone who made his debut last year, had some struggles. And speaking of guys who needed to add velo, I think Wisenhunt falls in that camp. He's always had that really good changeup, but it's the velocity has been kind of middling. Last year, like, he sat around 92 miles an hour. This year, spring training, he was sitting around 95. Like, his velo was up 3+ miles an hour. Strikeouts were up. Like, he was getting way more whiffs. The walks were up also. And I think that's, you know, that's the thing to watch is, you know, yes, the stuff is way up, but how can you still harness it? That remains to be seen. But I think when you look at the Giants pitching staff, they have a lot of injury risks on there. You got guys like Tyler Molly, Adrian Hauser, who just don't have a long track record of throwing a ton of innings. So I think that there's going to be opportunities during the season. And if Wisenhunt can show, you know, this improved fastball to go along with this really good changeup, I think he's someone who could come up and make an impact at some point during the 2026 season.
That was excellent stuff. And I'm going to reward you with picking between the two highest upside players in this system. They're pretty exciting. So who are you going with?
Yeah, this is hard. They probably have a third guy who you could throw in here too, who plays the exact same position as the other two. Like, this is, you know, an embarrassment of riches.
Looks good.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Joshua Gonzalez, and he's one of those guys that I think that scouts will bring up unprompted to you if they catch him on the right day, because I think his combination of just raw ability at such a young age is just really hard to match around the game. And this, you know, we should be said, this is a guy who, when he signed, he got close to a $3 million bonus. Like, this isn't someone who came out of nowhere. This is a guy who as an international amateur was well known to be one of the best guys in the class. And he showed it during his debut. He had 288, 404, 455 in the DSL. He's jumped stateside. I think there's a chance. I don't know if it's official, but I think there's a chance he could end up in low A at some point this season, like early in the season. You're muted now.
I think he's assigned there.
Has he been assigned there? Okay, I wasn't sure if it had been. But yeah, I mean, I think that the combination of skill set or skills that he provides is just tantalizing. Like, this is a guy who's an elite athlete, potential plus-plus runner, really, really good defender. And we'll see where the offense goes, but there's things to build on here. You know, he's the type of guy, I feel like, that if you're a rebuilding team and you're like, I just want to swing for the fences, I'm doing a long, you know, 2-3-4 year rebuild, this is the type of player I'm going for, because yeah, the error bars are high, but that's, you know, proximity wise, that's going to happen. But there's a lot to like here. And I mean, and you look at the underlying data too, like, good contact rates, really impressive EVs for his age. He's a switch hitter. The angles are poor, but I mean, that's, you know, he's 17. There's plenty of time to figure that out. I just think that this is a guy ceiling wise. You know, if we were ranking the top 100 just on ceiling, I think he would have to be in what, the top 10. Like, the upside here is huge.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm not official on Joe Swar, but I'm pretty sure that he's going to end up at San Jose. I don't even think he's playing ACL. I think Hernandez might be ACL to start, who is my pick, Louis Hernandez, who is there. There's two in the system, by the way. So it's the younger one.
So I want to make sure. Oh, geez. You don't want to run into that situation.
Who is in that system? If you go and check FanGraphs, he'll pop up. He's a pitcher, though. So very easy to separate the pitcher from the shortstop. He looked good in the backfield videos I've seen and everything that I've heard.
He looks super polished.
Yeah, I mean, one of the best players in the international class. Joe Swar was as well. They've kind of spent big there in back-to-back years and might have hit homers in back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. That does a huge amount of lifting on your system. Just ask the Brewers, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to go too far into it because we really haven't seen him in like official games yet. But I do think that Luis Hernandez is a name to kind of make sure that you're paying attention to. He's probably rostered in every kind of dynasty league at this point, because typically the highest upside international guy typically gets drafted even in 12 team leagues, in terms of dynasty. Underrated players. I'm going to go with a couple of different pitchers here. It's kind of a pick 'em. So I'm going to go with Luis De La Torre, who is rated lower than the other guy that I had listed here. But he was a non-drafted free agent, signed in July of 23, was like a Arizona high school guy that came from Mexico. It was kind of a weird background story. We wrote about it before. After his initial debut, five-game debut in the DSL, he's been phenomenal at every level. Repeated the DSL in 24, which happens with a lot of these young pitchers. I don't take a whole lot away from that, particularly these days where there's some limits on the number of players that can be playing domestically. Came over in 2025, really good in the complex league. Goes up to low A, makes 8 starts there, pitches to a 1.77 ERA. That's backed by 2.46 FIP, 2.92 XFIP. Generating strikeouts, throwing lots of strikes, generates a fair amount of ground balls as well. So there is a varied out generation profile here too. He's a lefty. He's undersized, but because he's a lefty, as we talked about earlier, even with the size stuff, et cetera, it all kind of works. And you know, he's kind of mid-tier in this system. I think in other systems, he probably would be a top 10 prospect. It's just, this is a deeper system.
I like that choice. I think that's a good one. This is funny. The Giants have like a few of these arms in the low minors who fit that profile of that intriguing. There's a lot to like there. And I think another one is Argenis Kamaya. He is someone who last year, as an 18-year-old, pushed aggressively, spent some time in the ACL, got up to San Jose, had his struggles there. His ERA was over 8, which isn't great. So he should return to low A to start the year, but there's, you know, good athlete, good fastball. His fastball is sits in the mid 90s already. He's got pretty good delivery, like works potential average-ish, above average control profile. So, which is something you're not going to say very often with someone that young. Got a slider, got a changeup. You know, his starter's arsenal. Starter's delivery, it's hard to project into a starter's that young, but I think that his performance last year is getting masked by what was a pretty, he struggled as an 18-year-old in low A. That's going to happen. And so I think that he's someone that if he might not be rostered, or you might be able to get him on the cheap right now, because someone's going to look at his numbers last year and be like, oh, okay, whatever, 8 ERA in low A, not great. So I think he's someone that there's a lot to like there. It's going to take a while for him to build up. And obviously he's years away from the majors, but if you're patient, I think that there could be a mid rotation starter type profile in the future here.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I think there's other arms in this system too. They've done a good job of really kind of finding varied names, varied styles of prospects to kind of build up the system. So I don't know how much of that was Mr. Posey per se, but you know, sometimes the previous regimes do some things well and some other things not so well. And we're certainly familiar with that with the Red Sox. All right, let's move on to the dreaded Rocky system and cap this off. 2026 contributors, they're both corner infield guys that potentially could hit for power.
Yep.
Charlie Condon and TJ Rumfield. Long term, I still like Condon more. Like, I think we finally, as an industry, kind of caught up to where he should have been coming out of the draft. Like, he was overpaid. He was overhyped. You know, whatever you want to say about that SEC season, he still hit there. I do still think there's on base ability here. I think there's angles. I think there's power. I think he's a big league regular. I think he's better than a lot of these corner bats that they've had in recent years, long term. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give him credit there. Still probably a 50, but if Condon is universally owned over the next 5 years in 12-team roto leagues, it wouldn't shock me either, right?
Yeah.
Like, the other name is TJ Rumfield, who I think is kind of keeping the seat warm there at first base. Nice acquisition for them. He's always been able to hit, but to me, he's more of like, it's like the Romy Gonzalez last year with the Red Sox, right? It's like guys that fill that first base role that kind of hit enough, but you don't want to commit to them as like your everyday guy.
Yeah.
The Rockies might, because of the Rockies.
It looks like he's going to be this year to start, at least.
He's going to be this year, yeah. As long as he holds it. But what are your thoughts on Rumfield? I know you've seen both Rumfield and Condon, so you can certainly compare and contrast. And maybe you even disagree with me about the long-term upside.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, especially too. And Condon has the pedigree. Like, he's going to get every opportunity, whereas Rumfield is a little more of an underrated guy. They obviously got him in the offseason. He had a great spring training. He had 286, 359, 554 slug in spring training with five home runs. I think the thing that really stood out to me was he had five walks and only two strikeouts in 64 plate appearances this spring. If you put the ball in play and you can lift the ball in the air like he can, and you do that at Coors Field, like, there can be fantasy value here. And I think this is a great example of, I think, kind of like the Michael Toglia play from a few years ago, where any other park, you're not that into it. But at Coors Field, if he's playing 81 games there as a left-handed hitter, and he puts up the EVs, like during spring training, he had a max EV of 113.1, which is higher. His max EV last year was 110.7. So power seems like it's taking a tick up. And just that, you know, that strikeout to walk rate, really intriguing. And you look last year, like 14% in zone whiff. So there's decent contact skills here. He's older. There's not a ton of upside, but it wouldn't surprise me at all if he's someone that, you know, we look in a couple of months and you look at the first base player rater and he's in the top half and you're like, really? And it's like, well, Coors Field, it can create magic.
We've seen this profile have like two good years before.
Yeah.
Right? Christian Walker is kind of like this guy, like that late breakout first baseman that like the skills and the power and angles finally kind of all blend together nicely and it works.
Yeah.
CJ Cron was kind of like that for a couple of years too. Yep. Like, they're not guys that you build around in fantasy, but like in a deeper league, if that's your corner infield guy or utility guy in their good years, you're happy to keep them.
100%. You know? Yeah. In a 16 plus team league, like he's a guy I would honestly try to stash just to see what it is. Cause worst case, you cut him in a month, but if he goes in there and produces anywhere and like carries over what he did in spring training, especially with those contact skills, like that's the part that really catches me. Cause if you put the ball in play in Coors, good things happen. And this is a guy who has power. If he can live in the gaps there, even, like, you know, he might be able to run a higher batting average than you would even expect. Like, I think it's an interesting profile, and, you know, credit to the Rockies. I think they got him in a very minor trade. Like, this was not like a high profile acquisition. This guy wasn't even the Yankees. I think he was just off the Yankees top 30. So
he was 30.
Oh, was he 30? Okay, yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, going out and getting, and this is the thing, you know, if you're the Rockies, this is what you should be doing. Take a chance on these guys who have good skills that match your park. Like, that's him. Put the ball in play. Then I think that's the concern I have with Condon is just the contact ability. Like, if he makes enough contact, the power is going to play. And I think Rumfield's kind of the opposite approach, where it's probably not the same caliber of power, but the contact ability might be at another level. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how he plays this year. But I think, yeah, if given the price, he's kind of a no-brainer target for me in later rounds of deeper leagues.
Yeah, I even think you could have posted him as like underrated player. There's not a lot of 2026 contributors. So
no, because we're not picking a pitcher. So.
No. All right, Ian. Ian, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try to say nice things about Ethan Holiday. All right. Everyone's seen him when I knocked him before. And it was in the context of like him versus Condon and kind of saying that like there's similar concerns there, like in terms of like where they end up defensively and the contact ability. That said, he still has outlier power. If the contact gets to a fringe average level consistently, and I mean like when he's in the upper minors, not. There's still upside here that this is a 30 home run guy, you know, and maybe as a corner outfielder, first baseman, maybe he's his dad. Like, I'm not writing that off. I don't know if he's going to be a multi-time all-star like his dad, but I mean,
that's a high bar.
Yeah, it's a really high bar, you know, but he's just a different player than what his brother is. His brother has more speed and more skills and that sort of thing. This is outlier power. He has plus raw power, no doubt about it. It's a tougher profile. He's not a shortstop and there's some swing and miss.
Yeah.
That's what my concerns were. I still think when it comes to like naming the highest upside player in the system, it's Ethan Holiday. And there's probably nobody else that you really want to mention. I wrote down Roldy Brito. I don't know how into Brito you are. There's some speed here, but it doesn't really translate to like big stolen base numbers either.
No, I don't know how good the base running instincts are. And there's a lot of chase in his profile. The angles aren't great. I think that, again, like he's the type of guy that if he was not in the Rocky system, I think he would be kind of maybe not, he wouldn't maybe underrated isn't the right word, but he would just be, he'd be someone, you know, just outside the top 10.
Yes.
But in the Rocky system, there's just not a, right now, there's just not a ton of high upside bats. And I think that just given his age, you know, there's things you can dream on here. It's a guy who had good EVs last year for his age, 102.7, 90th, 110.3 max.
Versatile EV. Defender.
Yep, as an 18-year-old, okay contact rates. Chase was a little elevated, as I said, and the angles weren't great, but he's got two. He's tooled up. Like, there's, you know, his raw sprint speed is going to be, like, close to plus-plus. It's just, I don't know what if the instincts are there base running-wise. Work in progress there, but again, he's 18. So I think, you know, and when we're talking about upside with the Rocky system, you got the further away might be the better right now because they've got obviously a new group in charge. Seems like they're trying to modernize things. And so I think that he's someone that there are tools to build on, similar to Ethan Holliday, where, you know, the raw power to build on there with Brito, it's a combination of speed and some impact. And I think that, yeah, as an 18-year-old, that's someone, if we're talking about upside, that I'm willing to take a shot on.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like I said, I still think Holliday is probably the guy that,
yeah,
you're looking at long-term is like having truly the highest upside in this system. You know, and we'll see where it goes with this new regime. Right. I think he's in a better spot than other first round picks that had some hit tool issues have been like a Benny Montgomery or somebody like that over the last couple of years. Someone that they did take fairly high in the draft a few years back that I think kind of slipped a little bit under the radar. And I'm going to list him as the underrated player in this Rocky system. He is a pitcher, so I understand why people stay away. Maybe he gets traded. That's Jackson Cox. And he came back last year. He had good strike rates. He had good zone rates. He misses enough bats. He's got outlier feel for spin with fairly good power. He's a righty. Sat 94 to 95, touched 98 last year. It's like 17 inches of vert with like 10 to 11 inches of arm side run. So the movement's pretty good. Underwhelming release traits. He doesn't extend on the mound very well. The release height is very standard at like 6 feet. There's not great plane. So it's not a huge bat missing fastball, but he locates it well enough to set up his off speed. And he's got a good changeup actually, but the seller here is the sweeper. It's like a 2,900 to like 3,000 RPM yakker. A little bit more slurvy than other sweepers because it has like 4 to 5 inches of drop typically, but it's like over a foot to a foot and a half of sweep. It's a weird angle. He commands it well enough. It misses bats. It gets chases. He's got a curveball variation on that has more depth. It's more of like a two-plane breaker, also high spin rates. And I think when I see a guy like this with high spin rates, he gets into the right player development org or the Rockies really decide to like invest in pitching development the way other teams have. He's a guy that has the attributes and raw traits to add different pitches into this arsenal and be a guy that kind of has that well-rounded six-pitch arsenal. I even wonder if there's like another changeup in here and a cutter. When you're spinning it like that and you have velocity and you ride your four-seam fastball, that tells me that you can probably throw a pretty damn good cut fastball that might be like 11-1 at 91. And it's like a bridge pitch, especially when you're throwing a sweeper, having that like in-between breaking ball between the curveball and the sweeper is valuable. So I think he's a guy that there's still more refinement to come, but he had a really good year last year coming off a couple years that were injury-laden. There's some power here. There's outlier feel for spin. He's somebody I liked when I was doing the Rocky system, and I'm still very interested to kind of follow along with Cox. It's just always hard. Pause when you're talking about Rocky's pitching prospects.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just hard. I mean, look at how they're handling Chase Dolander right now. He's not even in the rotation. So, yeah, he's an interesting arm, and I agree. He's someone that, you know, maybe he could be the outlier because we have seen some pitchers occasionally have success there. I'm thinking back to those Ubaldo Jimenez years from many moons ago. But yeah, no, I think that's a really good name to shout out. Because I would have felt bad if we didn't talk about at least one Rockies pitching prospect.
Got to have at least one. Well, there we have it, Ian. We've gone through all 30 teams. We've kind of broken down prospects and done it just in time for AAA opening day, which is kicking off within minutes. So yeah. We're going to sign off here. This has been the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for subscribing. We'll be back next week with some in-season podcasts.